We do a lot of things. Well, I should say we don't do a lot of things that we know we should do in life. Is that right? Aren't there things in your life that you know you should do, but you don't do them? I mean, are you like me that way? You know, for example, if you were to say to me, why don't you go exercise? Most of the time, I'm going to say because I don't feel like it. Right? That's what we say. I don't feel like it. You know, why don't you go do your homework? Because I don't feel like it. I don't feel like it. We have these things, and oftentimes we will say that, why didn't a lot of people come to church this morning? They woke up this morning, and look, we're all here, right? We woke up this morning, and it's raining outside, and some of you think it's cold. I think the temperature's great. But it's rainy and kind of nasty and depressing outside. And that first thought is, I don't feel like getting up and going to church, right? And as evidenced by a lot of empty chairs here, I think that's probably where a lot of people were. And just didn't feel like it. We don't, sometimes people don't feel like going to work. We don't feel like fixing the things around our house that need it. So here's the thing, and here's kind of what I want to talk about this morning. We often don't do what we absolutely know we need to do. Simply, the honest reason is we just don't feel like it. But we have this idea that somehow our behaviors are supposed to follow our feelings. In other words, we generally try to do the things that we feel like, and that really is kind of a really, really bad perspective to have, because it actually leads us to a circle that is not a good one. And I'll get into that here in just a minute. Let me kind of illustrate it this way. You know, let me make this statement. In those moments where we wake up and we say, I'm either going to go to church or I'm not going to go to church. We're choosing a circle, kind of like these roundabouts. How many of you like the roundabouts? Okay, those of you who don't like the roundabouts, because you don't know how to use them. And so you need to stay home. I'm just saying. You just need to stay home. Okay? If you don't know how to use a roundabout, stay home. If you can picture coming to a roundabout, you know, there's a good way to go, okay? And there's a bad way to go, okay? You could go either way in a roundabout. Some of you don't even know what I'm talking about. Some of you are looking at me like, what's a roundabout? Okay, well, you're hopeless, so let's just move on. But if you know what I'm talking about, so if you go the bad way, there's some bad things going to happen. And so as I get into this, let me kind of illustrate it this way. You know, you wake up tomorrow morning, and you don't feel like going to work. And so oftentimes we will say things like to ourselves, you know, I would feel better if I just take a day off. How many of you think you would feel better if you just took a day off? That's what we all feel. I would feel better if I just took a day off. What do they call it now? A mental health day? I'm going to take a mental health month. If that's okay with you all. So some are saying no, and others are saying, hey, that's fine with me. We got to get somebody else in here. But we feel like we would do that. But here's what ends up happening. We're working in this assumption that we will feel better because of something that we did. But the truth is, and if you've ever done that, you know that at the end of the day, you look back on that day, and we look back and we say, I should have gone to work. Because you know what happens? We end up not feeling better at all. In fact, we end up feeling worse. Because what we did was we stayed home and probably did some things maybe we shouldn't have done, probably watched some things we shouldn't have watched and ate some things we shouldn't have eaten, maybe drank some things we shouldn't have drunk. And we end up at the end of the day and we look back on it and we say, oh man, we have this guilt now and this feeling of, you know, I didn't do what I was supposed to do. And then the end of the week comes and we get this paycheck and it's short. And now we're really looking back and saying, man, I don't feel better at all after taking that day. In fact, I feel worse. And it's because we misunderstand. And that is today's principle actually at work in our real lives. Our feelings should not be the determining factor of our behavior. Our behaviors, we think that our behavior should follow our feelings, but it's actually the other way around. We actually should allow, our feelings are at the end of the line. I'll illustrate here in just a minute. This is kind of a complex truth today, so I'm going to kind of stick to my notes, but you've really got to focus now today. So in reality, We don't feel better at all when we behave that way. We need to realize that our behavior didn't follow our feelings nearly as much as our feelings followed our behavior. See, at the end of the week, after we followed our feelings, we took the day off, we thought we would feel better, we end up not. Our feelings actually were far more affected by our behavior than our behavior is by our feelings. And that's kind of where the principle of the day today is. So let me give you that. Here's our principle of the day today. The circle of death and the circle of life are the same. Now, this I have to explain this, so just kind of hang with me here for a couple minutes while I try to help us to understand this. This is a principle that talks about there are, when we're at that moment of choice, when we're saying, okay, I don't feel like doing something, I don't want to do this, or maybe I'm kind of hinging on whether or not I'm going to go this, whether I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do or not do what I'm supposed to do. We are facing two circles. We're going to get on that roundabout. We're going to go one way or the other. We're going to go the right way, and it's going to end up with good feelings, or we're going to go the wrong way. Let me show you what it looks like in a picture form. Here's what, and thank you, Matt, for making this for me. So in picture form, let me just talk you through this. So what we think of, what we think here is happening in our lives, we think that we start right here. This is where we mess our lives up. When we start our process here, right here with our feelings, this is where we get ourselves messed up. See, this is where I said, I don't feel like going to work today. I don't feel like exercising today. I don't feel like going to church today. I don't feel like doing this for my spouse. I don't feel like cleaning my house. Whatever the things are, we start there. But this is actually not where we start. We think that our feelings should then drive our behavior. But actually, this should be the last step in the process of the decisions that we make, rather than the first step. What should be the first step? The first step is right up here. What we need to be doing is starting up here with how we think about things, and how we see if I here's, because here's what happened. So what we actually began with here is when we were toying with the idea of not going to work. Right? I mean, you open your eyes and it's like, I don't feel like going to. But really, what we were doing was we were exploring what would it be like to not go to work today. What could I do instead? Man, this bed is so comfortable. Or even if it's not, you tell yourself it is, right? I mean, most of us don't have a comfortable bed. But boy, it sure is more comfortable at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning than it is, you know, at 9 p.m. on Saturday night, right? Because we don't get into it at night when we should at night. We talk ourselves into it. We start thinking our way through that. And then we start talking to ourselves, right?
Yeah.
We talk ourselves into it, don't we, Dylan? Boy, it's good to have Dylan back with us. By the way, Dylan told his boss he don't want to work on Sunday anymore. And he's kind of this close from being the boss, so we're kind of real proud of him about that. And that's one of, it's going to be good to have him back up here with us on our worship team next week. But we have this, we talk ourselves into it. We start saying, well, you know, I mean, after all, I work hard. I'm tired. I will feel better if I just take a me day. A me day. I'm not sure what that is, me time. But it's my understanding that some people take me time, they go to a spa somewhere and have somebody do something with your nails, which I don't understand that. I don't understand men who do that. Like, I got to be honest. I don't get that. But there are men who do it. And I don't want anybody touching my nails. That's like somebody picking your nose. It is. It is, too. It's like a very personal thing that it's like, no, yeah, I don't need you to pick my nose. You can pick your friends. You can pick your nose, but you can't pick your friend's nose. So, but we talk ourselves in. Here we go. We talk ourselves into that. We give ourselves all these reasons why we shouldn't go to work, why we shouldn't go to church, why we shouldn't do this, why we shouldn't do different things. And so that ends up driving our behavior. And so we end up staying home from work, and that's what ends up eventually causing us to not feel good about ourselves. See, and now we're down on ourselves, and our feelings have actually been driven the opposite of what we think. We think that if our feelings should tell us what to do rather than our feelings being a result of what we do. And so that's kind of what it looks like. Can I make some other applications here then? This is exactly what happens when we become addicted to something. See, nobody says, you know, no, okay, here's what happens. I wonder what it'd be like to try that. What would it be like to feel that? See, we see these things. How many of you grew up with Cheech and Chong, Jared? See? It's like, man, they're having so much fun. I mean, they're having so much fun. You know, and I wonder what it'd be like to try that. I wonder what it'd be like. That's every child. You know, I told the story here. Since June is no longer with us, I can retell the story. When I was 9 years old, and I stole some cigarettes from somebody and smoked one out in the woods with a friend of mine, because we like to try things, right? We want to say, I wonder what that'd be like. I wonder what this is how it happens. And then we start talking about it. We start talking to friends. We start talking to the wrong people, and speech leads them to that behavior. And then what happens? Then our feelings follow. So this is what causes addiction. This is how adultery happens, by the way. Well, listen, now please let me just say there are, if you're here today and adultery has made its way into your present marriage or your past marriage or something like that, please don't feel alone. You'd have sorry, had a breakfast burrito. I don't know what that was. Listen, seriously, don't feel alone. That is an insidious part of our society. That is an attempt by Satan to disrupt marriage. It's happening all over the place. But this is how it happens. See, we start with these thoughts. Well, my spouse doesn't pay attention to me. My spouse doesn't show me affection. But boy, that lady at the convenience store does. That man at the other place, that he does. Well, he treats me right. See, this is how it starts. We start having these thoughts, and then we start talking to those people. And, you know, what used to have to happen in person now happens on Instagram and Snapchat and all the rest of those things, whatever, I don't care. All those other things, you know what I'm saying. We start talking. And when we start talking, and then we talk to our friends. You know, well, yeah, you know what? If your wife doesn't do that, if your husband doesn't do that, well, here's what I think you ought to do. I think you ought to get new friends. That's what I think. But see, then we have the behavior, and now we're left with the feelings. See, it didn't start with feeling. It started with these thoughts. It started with exploring these things in our minds. It's how addiction happens. It's how adultery happens. This is how divorce happens. This is how divorce happens. People start thinking, man, I remember when I was single. I remember how good it felt. I remember my high school sweetheart was so much kinder. I remember when I was dating how much fun it was. You know, it's not fun anymore. Oh, it's getting quiet in here. We start thinking about that. We start thinking about, you know, I wonder if there's something better out there for me. I mean, there's a lot of divorce. A lot of Christians are divorced, and they're happy. And pastor says it all the time. Some of the happiest people he knows are people on their second or third marriage. And that's true. But that doesn't mean you ought to be thinking about that. I'm not talking to you if you're still married. I'm talking to those of you who it's already done, and now you have to move on. There is always life after divorce. There is life after everything. But I'm not talking to you if you're still married. If you're still married, that's not how the thoughts ought to be. But this is what happens. People think about, well, you know, I got these, you know, I just think I'd be this, or I just think this. And then we start talking to friends. You know what friends we talk to? Now, please, I'm trying to be kind, but I'm going to be very direct today. If you're unhappy in a marriage and you want to, you're trying to sort out how you feel about your marriage, can I tell you who not to talk to? Other people who are unhappy in their marriage. Well, I'm thinking about getting a divorce, so I think I'm going to go talk to people who have done it. I'm going to go talk to people who are also unhappy the same way, because you know what happens? And it's natural. We all want to feel like somebody else gets us. We want to feel like somebody understands us. But when we go to other people who are broken the same way we are, struggling with the same things we are, we're going to end up feeding off of each other. See, we talk about it. Oh, yeah, my wife does the exact same thing, and I'm about done with it. I'm about tired of her, and you shouldn't have to put up. Here's what we say. You don't deserve that. Now, that may very well be true. But listen, but that kind of speech, that's going to lead to divorce. This is how it happens. And then we end up with the feelings afterward. And again, please understand, I am not saying that there is not a time for that. There is. There's. And I deal with every day of my life practically. I deal with different circumstances, and circumstances are all different. But with two people who really want it to work and are committed to doing whatever God says, that can be saved. But this is how addiction happens. Adultery happens. This is how we end up overspending. This is how we get in financial trouble. I'm just trying to bear with me. I'm laying a foundation for the message here. This is what we start thinking about, things we'd like to have. Like a hot tub. Did I already say that? I said that a few weeks ago, didn't I? Yeah. We start saying things we'd like to have. We start thinking about it. And then we talk, and it's like, and so I'm going to talk to, you know who I'm going to talk to about that? I'm going to talk to salesmen. So would a hot tub be good for my health? Oh, yeah, Mr. Sapp, my joints hurt. Your doctor would tell you, you need this hot tub. But that's what we do, right? I don't go ask my car mechanic if I should get a hot tub. I go talk to people who are going to tell me exactly what I want to do. And then if I buy a hot tub, that's going to lead to some great feelings. I mean, I'm telling you, that's going to be awesome. No. I'm being facetious there, but this is how we get in trouble spending money, isn't it? And it all goes back to the fact that we don't know where we ought to be starting. We don't focus on the right place. The starting place needs to be here. This is where we're going to stop ourselves from doing the things we shouldn't do and it's going to help us to get done the things we ought to do. If we start here, we're almost always going to do the wrong thing. If we start with our feelings, we're almost always going to do the wrong thing. So it's kind of like, I do these things. I do drugs because I'm sad. I spent that money because I was sad and lonely. No, you're sad because you spent that money you didn't have. Right? See, it's the other way around. That's what I would call a circle of death. But it doesn't have to be that way. See, this same principle could go the other way. We can start with the right thoughts. We can focus on the right things, and talk to the right people and talk to ourselves in the right way. It would lead us to great behaviors and the behaviors we know we ought to do. And if we do that, then we're going to feel great about ourselves. Look, don't we feel great when we accomplish something? You ever get a project at your house finished and it was good? Oh, that feels, it feels great, right? As opposed to looking at something always half done or not done. We can program. See, this is a choice that we make. And here's the problem. When you get to this point right here, you don't have any choice. Can you change how you feel by wanting to? Come on, talk to me. Can you say, okay, I'm just not going to be sad right now? It doesn't work like that. I'm not going to feel betrayed right now. I'm not going to feel this, No, we can't control our feelings, but what we can control, and this is where we're headed today, where we can control is if we start in the right place and we control that right there, it's going to control this, and that's going to control this, and that is going to control that. For those of you listening online, that means thoughts are going to control speech. Speech are going to control behavior. And behavior is going to control how we feel. Can I give you one last illustration, which I think really kind of brings it home? Let's talk about exercise for a minute. Let's talk about exercise for a minute. When we're out of shape, the last thing we feel like doing is exercising, right? I mean, when you're out of shape and your lung capacity's not there and your muscles, aren't used to doing anything and all these, the last thing we're going to do is feel like exercise. So if you're waiting, you say, well, I'll exercise when I feel like it. Okay. Yeah, I'll see you at the Y when we're, in heaven. We don't feel like that. So what do we do? So what has to happen? So instead of starting with feelings, we have to start with our thoughts. We have to start thinking about what would it be like to feel better? What would it be like to be able to walk without being out of breath? What would it be like to be able to climb these stairs without my knees going all the way up those stairs? Do your girls do that? Yeah. Wouldn't you like to be able to just walk up those stairs without having to, get to the last one and catch your breath? So we have to start thinking about that. What would it be like to be a little bit healthier? What would it be like to feel a little bit better about how I look? We start thinking about that, but in a positive way, not in, well, you look like, you know what. Hi, Tim. He's awake. He thought I was going to say it. So, you know, we start thinking about that in a positive way. And then we start talking to people about that, you know, and getting support from each other and all those kind of things. And that leads us then to that behavior. So what happens when we get ourselves then to not go by feelings, but rather go by those thoughts and talk ourselves into it and actually get to a gym or start walking or start riding a bike or start running or doing something? What happens in a few weeks? The lung capacity starts coming back. Maybe we drop a few pounds. Maybe we start getting our muscles aren't quite so sore the next time. And before you know it, suddenly now you feel like exercising. That's how it works. But we don't do that. Stop looking around. Everybody stop looking around. Look, you see, we can turn this thing of the circle of death around and make it a circle of life where we start doing that. How about our relationships? Does this work in relationships? Well, I just don't feel good about my relationship with mom and dad, my children, my spouse. Wait a minute. This same principle applies to relationships also. You know, so you're saying if I think better things about my spouse, I'll end up feeling better about it. That's exactly what I'm saying. About a year ago, I don't know when it was, about a year ago, Doug, I know you'll remember this because we've talked about it. I shared a series of messages about staying in love. It's easy to fall in love. It's hard to stay in love. And one of the things I talked about was the happiest couples, when there's research done, and they say do all this research about people who are truly happy in their marriage. And the happiest couples, the couples that report being so happy and content in their marriages, they all have one thing in common. I called it stupid love. Crazy love. You know what that was? Do you remember that, Doug? We talk about that. They all have this thing in common. They have this unrealistically high view of their spouse. It's like, well, you know, man, you know, if somebody says, boy, your wife, well, she kind of nags you, doesn't she? Oh, no, she just is so diligent about reminding me of everything I have to do. She's awesome. I don't know where I'd be without her because every minute of the day she's reminding me of what I need to do. They have this unrealistic expectation, you know? Boy, your husband is a slob. I mean, he just throws stuff everywhere. No. He just wants me to feel so good about being able to have a place in his life where I can take care of his clothing, you know? And I take such... And he tells me I had such good care of his laundry. See, they have this stupid view, this stupid kind of love, this crazy kind of love. Well, but you know what? Here's what happens. See, they think that way, and then they end up talking like that to each other. That's how they talk to each other. And when they talk to each other like that, that leads to a whole bunch of different behaviors. And those behaviors then end up causing them to feel great about each other. That's the secret to these happiest couples. Same thing with parents and kids. You know, looking for the... It's how we start our thought process right here. This is the key right here. What are we looking for in each other? What are we looking for? When I look at my wife, am I looking for her flaws, or am I looking for the good things she does? In my children, am I looking for their flaws, or am I looking for what they're doing wrong? You see? And that's going to set us on a course. You see, it's a roundabout. It's a roundabout. And when we get to that point, depending on if we're going to go this way or we're going to go this way. And if we go the right way, it means we're looking for those positive things. We're looking for that good in what's happening. Now, I know there are some, okay, so I'm sort of known as this eternal optimist. You know, you all tease me, many of you tease me, because I just see the good. I've got that stupid kind of love. That stupid kind of, you know, oh, they didn't really mean that. They ran over you. But they didn't mean to. And no, they left the road and came up into your yard and ran you over. Yeah, but it was probably a brake issue. I get that. So I get that you're not on board with me. So I know. Here's what so many people do who don't like what I'm teaching right now. You have a word for yourself. You call yourselves realists. See, a realist, though, and a pessimist are actually the same thing, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Now, please hear me, and I mean this kindly. Because when you're dealing with people who are flawed, who are sinners, who are mistake prone, who are we just are, then realism means we're dealing with those are real issues. So therefore, if you're going to focus on that, a pessimist looks at the real life. You're going to look at real life, then you're going to be a pessimist because you're looking at real stuff, real flaws. You don't have to look very hard at me to find flaws. I know some of you are saying, "No, I just." Oh, I thought it was you. Well, you laughed at him. You didn't have to laugh and encourage him. You know, and we don't. So that means if we're going to sit and focus on the real person in front of, this is why I said, happy couples, they're just unrealistic in their view of their spouses. Now again, please don't take this to the extreme. Again, so the realists in the crowd, you know what you're doing right now? You're going clear to the extreme on the example. You're saying, "Oh, well, you're talking about this abusive situation." I'm not talking about abusive. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm just talking about some of the stupid things that some of you couples fight about. I'm serious. Stupid stuff. Things that don't matter. You know, you're mad about one thing, but it's not really enough to build a whole argument on. So you lay a foundation with a whole bunch of stupid stuff. Like, deal with that one issue, but don't try to build your case by talking about everything else. From where somebody leaves a pair of socks to, you know, just don't make it more than it is. So and how we think. So I'm behind time here. I've got to get on track here. See, when our thoughts dwell on the flaws and the negative things of our speech is going to follow that, and our behavior is going to follow that. If you dwell on all the flaws of your spouse, guess what? You're going to talk about it all the time. We talk about it all the time. All my husband does this. All my wife does this. My wife never does this. Never does that. Really, never. Really, always. Really? Like 24 hours a day? 7 days a week? Doesn't sleep? Doesn't eat? All my husband does is sit on the couch. That is not true. He also stinks up your bathroom, and he does a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. So, be realistic. If you're going to be a realist. So that you don't think that all I'm going to do is just sit up here and talk about my opinions all day. Let me show it to you in Scripture, and I've got to kind of hurry this. So let me show you what God had to say about this. All right, first of all, God said that within each one of us there is both good treasure in us and bad treasure. What He means by that is thoughts. We all have good thoughts and bad thoughts. All right, let me show it to you in Scripture. Luke chapter number 6 and verse 45. Here's what Jesus said. He said, "A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings out that which is good. And an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings out that which is evil." So before we go too far with that, you say, "Well, that's talking about two different men." No, it's not. It's talking about we all have a good man and an evil man inside of us. See, the Bible says that we're supposed to have this. We're supposed to put on a new man when we're saved, right? The Holy Spirit lives. So we could call the good man that inner man where our spirit is, the part where God can talk to. Our outer man, though, is that evil man. That's our flesh. And which one is it easier to hear from? Okay, which one is it easier for you to hear from, your flesh or from the spirit? From our flesh, right? But they're meeting in our heart. So there's good treasure and evil treasure meeting in our heart. One of those two things is going to come out. One of those things is going to come out. One's going to come out consistently. And you know what it is? It's wherever we focus, wherever our focus is. You know, it's that old thing that people talk about, is the glass half empty or half full kind of thing. Well, how about if we just drink it while it's cold? Stop worrying about whether or not it's half empty or half full. But the idea is, you see, if we focus on the good, okay, in anything we do, look, even just everyday things. Watch, when you go home today, if you go home and cook a meal, somebody's going to cook the meal, right? So everybody who's going to eat, they can either focus on, you're going to do that, Dylan? Well, that's good. You're a chef, after all. What time, by the way? So, you know, you can focus on the quality of that meal, or you can focus on the fact that that person cared enough to cook for you. Right? Well, and it may be great. It may be terrible. But what we focus on, what we go into that meal focusing on. I'm talking about when you sit down, are you focused? Are you saying, well, I'm going to reserve my judgment until I taste this? No, you should have already decided, I appreciate the fact that this person cares enough about me to cook. See, that's where our focus, if our focus is there, that's going to lead us to speech, to the right speech, which is going to lead us to better behavior, it's going to lead us to better feelings. You know, you can focus on whether or not, your husband or your wife mowed the lawn or whether they missed a few spots.
Nope.
Right? Now, you laugh. I do some marriage counseling where that very thing can come up. Well, he doesn't even care enough to do a good job mowing the grass. Well, see, he doesn't get over close to the thing, it's just, doesn't do that. Wait a minute. What are you focused on? What are you looking for? What are you looking for in your kids? So they got all D's last time. They got all C's this time. But it's still not B's. Still not A's. What are we looking for? Where are our thoughts? Is it on progress or is it on perfection? Listen, if we could get ourselves to focus on progress in people rather than perfection, you need to do that for me. Okay? But hear me. Your shoes are tied. Look up, please. You need to do that for me. You need to be looking for progress in me, not perfection. If you're looking for perfection in me, then it's not going to happen. Well, I'll be glad when the pastor gets this thing of preaching down right, or gets this thing down right. I'm never going to get the administration thing down right. I'm just telling you that right now. That's why we have an executive ministry board. But look, and I need to do that for you. See, when I counsel the same people over and over and over and over again, I don't just give you one counseling appointment, do I? Well, if you don't get it right, then I'm just not going to meet with you again. That wouldn't be much of a counselor, would it? See, we need to be looking for that. What are we looking for? You could look at the fact that your team made a bad decision and it's going to cost you something, or you could look at the fact that your team made a bad decision but came to you to talk about it. If your teenager comes to you to talk about it, you should be celebrating that. You should be glad about that. Not chewing them out because of the mistake there. See, it's where we put our focus. We're naturally inclined, though, to go the wrong way on that roundabout. For some reason, it seems like the right way to go. We focus on that negative. If a friend said you something you didn't like, you could focus on that. Or you could focus on the fact that, my friend said something I didn't. Or you could focus on the fact that, man, my friend cares enough about me to tell me the truth. My family cares enough about me to tell me the truth. Hey, if somebody cares enough about you to tell you the truth, they respect you. If you're worth keeping, you're worth correcting. Billy, you're a boss, isn't that right? Or you're kind of a boss. Like a boss. No, never mind. So, look, you see what I'm saying? It's where is our focus? What are we looking for in people? What are we looking for in the people around us? So, where our focus is going to determine. There's both good and bad in us. And one of those is going to come out, which brings us to the second thing then, which is our speech. So that determines our speech. And let's look at the rest of this verse. See, there's the first part of the verse about the good trade. We have both good and bad. But watch what the next part of that verse says. It says, for the abundance of the heart, out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. So watch. What does that mean? That means good treasure, bad treasure. They're both in here. Whichever one is in abundance, that's what's going to come out. If you are a negative person, if I am a negative person, it's because I am constantly focusing on negative things. And that's what I'm putting in my heart. Negative, 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 negative. Bad, 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 bad. Flaws, 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 flaws. Imperfection, imperfection, imperfection in everybody else around me. And when I do that, I'm filling up my heart with all that negative, and that's why I speak the way I do. See? There are people... And again, a lot of this is so applicable to marriage and parenting and all these other things. People say, well, I know I don't talk the way I should, but it's because they do. No. Nobody else is the reason you're a jerk. That's harsh. No, that's true. That's true. When I'm a jerk, it's because I'm a jerk. It's because I have put a bunch of negative stuff in my heart, and that's what comes out. Because I can't help it. And by the way, once it's on the tongue, it takes on a life of its own. Listen, that's number three. I'm going to get to this, and we'll just jump right into it. You see, because that's kind of obvious here. So the third part then is where it gets worse, because once it makes its way to our tongue, then it takes on a life of its own, and we're not able to control it very well once it makes its way to our tongue. Let me show you that in Scripture. In James chapter number 3 and verse number 2, the Bible says this, "If any man offends not with his tongue," in other words, if you can keep from saying negative things and saying wrong things to people, you are a mature man, and watch this, you're able to control your whole body. You see that? Now, is God right or not? Does God always tell the truth? Does God know us better than we know ourselves? He said if you can control your tongue, you can control your body. You can control your behaviors. He said if you can control what you say, you can control what you do. But once you start speaking, that's going to determine what you do. Did you know I've never seen two deaf men fight? I've never seen two deaf guys in a fist fight. Have you? Do you know why? Because every fist fight starts with words. Every one of them. Every time there's a fist fight, there's always a verbal thing going on first, right? Our words. You see, you don't see deaf guys doing that. Because they're not, I know. I didn't say they didn't give hand gestures. I said they weren't. So look, you see, our tongues control what we do. What do we do when we have an argument? We are always trying to one-up the next person. We're not interested in balancing scales in the fight, in a verbal argument. And once you have exhausted, listen, once you have exhausted all of the logical argument that you can, and that person's not listening, do you know what the only thing left is? Personal words. See, when you can't attack the argument anymore, you can't attack the issue anymore, you got to attack the person. When we attack the person, we start engaging in a whole bunch of behaviors that are very, very harmful. And it started with what we let our minds focus on. It started with where we started letting our thoughts go. We started considering all the negative in that person. We started considering all the wrong things and all. And I'm not saying, look, and they may all be real. Ladies, your husband may be the world-class jerk. And he may do terrible things. I'm so glad none of you ladies said amen. I'm so thankful for that. Because you know what happened there? You controlled your tongue. Man, that's saying something, given this verse. And husbands, your wife may be cold and mean and nasty and all that. Those may all be true things. But when we say them, we end up acting on them. And by the way, he goes on in this passage. We don't have time to look at it all because I'm already way past time. But when we look at this, if you read that whole passage, James chapter 3, I dare you to read the whole thing. What he says there is, he says, your tongue is so powerful that you really can't. He said, the tongue can no man tame. I think it's verse 10. He said, but the tongue can no man tame. It is full of deadly poison, an unruly evil. He said, it sets on fire. He said, it is set on fire of hell. Look, read it. That's what I probably should have put the whole passage up. It's better than what I'm saying. God always says things better than I do. But he said, yeah, your tongue is like lighting a fire and burning out of control. And if you've ever been the object of a verbal tirade, you know exactly what I'm talking about, especially when it gets personal. Especially when it gets personal. When a boss goes beyond the job issue and starts berating his employees and talking about them personally, that is a horrible place to be in. When a spouse does it, when a child, when a parent, all these things, then we've all been guilty. We've all been guilty, we've all been victims, we've all been there. And it's caused by where we start, caused by what we allow ourselves to think about. And then finally, so you know, look, okay, let me say this one thing. Have you ever gotten into an argument? And you really wanted to stop, but you couldn't. You just couldn't. You knew you shouldn't say what you're about to say, but you said it anyway. You didn't want to. You even felt bad about it before you even said it. But there is something in us once it gets to our tongue, we can't control it. But where we can control it is back up here in our thoughts. And we can only control it by what we allow ourselves to focus on, because you can't control every thought that comes into your head. So if you have a lot of negative thoughts come into your head, please hear me. I love you, and I want to be your pastor now. And let me be real serious for now, because I really do love you. You can't control the negative thoughts that come into your head, but you can outnumber them. You can outnumber them. If you are plagued by negative thoughts all the time about somebody, something, something like, you can outnumber that by constantly bringing good in, because out of the abundance of your heart, your mouth is going to speak. And once your mouth starts speaking, you can't stop it most of the time. And we end up saying a lot of things, and then that drives our behaviors, which drives our feelings. Which brings us then to our feelings, which is how we, you know, how I feel now is determined not by anything other than what I just did. The truth of the matter is, how you feel right now is determined by what you've done. Good or bad. You know, if you went out, if you forced yourself to go out and exercise, how do you feel? Tired. Thirsty. Sore. No, but you feel good, right? We feel good about that. You know, we've accomplished something we were supposed to do. We feel good about that. You came to church. I hope you feel good about it. Well, I did while we were singing. I don't so much now. I don't know what happened. I don't know what the difference is. But seriously, I hope you feel good about that. Well, I heard some things I didn't like. Okay, but it was good that you came today. You could have stayed in bed. You could have been anywhere else in the world today. You could have been anywhere else right now. You could be in bed. You could be watching a movie. You could be doing anything. You could be getting in trouble. You chose to come here, and I hope you feel good about that, because our feelings follow our behaviors, which follow our tongues, which follow our thoughts. So let me give you one last thing here. So we choose this life or death. This picture we had up earlier, we either choose life or death, and we choose it not in the moment, but we choose it by what we allow to take up all the residency inside of our minds. And that's why the Apostle Paul said this, and I'll close with this. In Philippians chapter 4, here's what Paul said. Paul said, here's how I'm able to be content in all things. He said, finally, he said, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, lovely, of good report, if there's any good there, that's what virtue means, if there's any praise. Notice the last four words. Think on these things. Now, I know for some of you, you say, well, I just can't sit around and just think about all these goods because I've got to deal with real life. You don't have to think about real life. Hear me, please. For those of you that are really, really hurting, and I'm as close to you as I can get. Life will find you. Life will find you. Those bills will find you. You don't have to think about them all the time because they'll find you. Collectors will find you. The negatives of this world will find you. You don't have to make them your focus. If you make them your focus, you're choosing to do that. I'm not saying you have to deal with them. You have no choice. But you don't have to make them your focus. You can outnumber all of those things and find a little peace for your spirit. And peace in our relationships, and peace in our homes, and peace in our the way we feel about ourselves, if we will take seriously what he says here. And try to change our focus to things that are positive. Can I would just suggest that maybe you check out what, you know, in the morning when you start your day, I would suggest you get a Bible out and check out what Jesus posted 2,000 years ago instead of whatever the person you're following posts. It's just a thought. Just a thought. I would maybe check out what happened in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago instead of what happened in Washington, D.C. Or what is being said happens in Washington, D.C. You'll do yourself a world of good by stop listening to all the garbage that this world has to put into your brain. Because, take this the right way, your brain's not big enough to hold all that garbage. It's just not. So if you put all that garbage in, there's not going to be any room for anything good. Put the good in there instead. I'm not asking us to ignore the negative things in our lives. What I am saying is let's focus on some good. I believe you'll do it. I dare you. I dare you to do it. I dare you to try it for a week. And see if maybe a week from now you don't feel better than you feel today. Father, thank you for an opportunity.